Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We're both here today. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, we start with the good. There's more Hillary Clinton email server revelations coming out, which are certainly not good, but it's good that they're coming to light. Basically, it was an open highway for hackers, and folks can read about that in a variety of different places today. But one of the things we're looking at here in our good martini is just how flat-footed Hillary Clinton in particular and the Clinton campaign in general were for the email story. They talk about how Hillary Clinton here ignored the advice of John Podesta to get everything out there, let everybody chew on it, and then the story would go away and people would focus on other things. Whether that would have actually happened, who knows. But Hillary Clinton decided the drip, drip, drip philosophy would work better. And from what Politico has found here from talking to unnamed Clinton insiders is that basically they're not very impressed with Hillary Clinton. Quote, "It sounds crazy, but I think she simply wasn't equipped to deal with all this. She's never been a great candidate, okay? She needed time, and campaigns don't give you time. She was blindsided. And I think only now, after all this crap, is she finally in the right headspace." Unquote. Nearly every one of 50 advisors, donors, Democratic operatives, and friends we interviewed for this story thought Clinton was a mediocre candidate who would make a good president if given a chance. They painted a portrait of a politician who talked about learning from past mistakes while methodically repeating them, a far cry from the formidable shatterer of glass ceilings who had put such a scare into Obama late in the 2008 primary. So, Jim, obviously a long way to go here. She's still the prohibitive favorite. But if that's what your best friends are saying about you, things aren't going too well.
There are two really golden quotes you kind of alluded to there. Just be the implications there. One, early on, she says, "I feel like I'm rolling out a lot of substantive programs on issues that people care about. We're getting one day's news coverage. There's nothing larger knitting it together. We're not breaking through. And my team needs to get their act together on the email response." Sure, Hillary, it's the team's fault. You yourself have handled this one flawlessly, and you're just undermined by incompetent staff all around you. Ah, poor Hillary. Good help is so hard to find these days. As you point out, they're following her strategy, not Podesta's. So there's that. And then the second one where they say, look, it sounds crazy, but I think she just simply wasn't equipped to deal with all this. Hey, you know, let's make her commander in chief, right? Email, it's complicated. The news site, she's just not up to this. So the best thing to do is put her in charge of the nuclear arsenal and a world on fire and making the country a better place for 4 to 8 years. You know, what is this, the Peter principle? She totally can't handle the job of candidate, but she can be great as president. What? So anyway.
Yes. And, you know, this story came out in what, February? It's now 8 months later. And of course, you have that much time to respond to crises in the world when you're elected president. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, there's no tight deadlines. There's no 3 a.m. phone calls, to use a phrase.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And yesterday was the Ballyhooed No Labels Conference up in New Hampshire. This group of people who claim they're not Republicans or Democrats, and basically they're people who have been drummed out of their respective parties and are trying to find a different identity for themselves. And so this is a John Huntsman project, essentially. Certain candidates were invited. One of them was Donald Trump. He appeared and he took some questions. And one of them was from a young lady named Lauren Batchelder, who's a student at St. Anselm's College up in New Hampshire. And here's the first part of that exchange.
Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can prove me wrong, but I don't think that you're a friend to woman.
I knew I shouldn't have picked her. I knew I shouldn't have picked her. All right, so let me give you that answer right now.
So Trump went on to say about the women he's hired to very important positions in his companies, including the construction of Trump Tower. He talked about the success of his daughter Ivanka and so forth, and says he, of course, loves and respects and cherishes women. We've heard that from him on numerous occasions. And then the microphone went back to Lauren Batchelder because she didn't actually get to finish her question. And here's what she said then.
I thought it was finished.
Is it on? Okay. I want to get paid the same as a man, and I think you understand that. So if you become president, will a woman make the same as a man? And do I get to choose what I do with my body?
And so Trump answered that, saying, if you do great work, you'll get paid the same. And I'm pro-life was his response. So in the end, it turns out Lauren Batchelder is a volunteer for the Jeb Bush campaign. The Jeb Bush campaign claims that they did not put her up to that, that she did that of her own accord, and that there was no coordination. Trump, who actually, I thought, from the initial exchange came off looking pretty good, couldn't help himself on Twitter, saying the arrogant young woman who questioned me in such a nasty fashion at No Labels yesterday was a Jeb staffer. And then in all caps, how can he beat Russia and China? So he's on message. Jim, this probably looks worse for Jeb, even if there wasn't coordination, because her talking points were very, very much to the left. And it looks ugly. And then, of course, Trump can't help himself.
Yeah. If this is tied to the Jeb campaign, I don't see how it helps him to have an alleged ally, an alleged supporter, an alleged volunteer running around saying, my body, my choice, right? By and large, the Democrats are the pro-choice party. By and large, the Republicans are the pro-life party. I don't see how that advances the ball for Jeb Bush. I think, as you pointed out, it actually gave Donald Trump a pretty good moment. The other thing, she said, are you a friend to woman? Which one? And then the next question I would say is to the questioner, are you a friend to grammar? So, yeah, nobody comes off looking that great in this one. And again, leave it to Donald Trump to actually have a pretty good exchange and to look like he's the principled conservative in this. And then he's got to go and throw a tantrum on Twitter again and say, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, watch his Twitter account tonight, because he's allegedly live tweeting the Democrat debate. So we'll see what he has to do about that. And on to the crazy martini today, Jim. And as you probably heard this morning, big reports from Dutch officials essentially saying a Russian-made anti-aircraft missiles shot down the passenger airliner over the Ukraine last July, killing all 298 people on board. The instant response from a U.S. spokesman for the U.S. Embassy in Russia, a guy named Will Stevens on Twitter, is, quote, my heart goes out to the victims of MH17. What a terrible tragedy. Too much energy spent on trying to cast blame. Jim, how dare we find out who's shooting down commercial airliners?
Look, Greg, maybe the Russians shot down the airliner. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe you did it. Maybe I. Who are we to judge, right? Who are we to say? Let's just let bygones be bygones. Let's just ignore the mass murder of innocent civilians and just move on, right? Moveon.org, Greg. You know what's kind of fascinating is you look in, we can compare this to Obama's interview with Steve Croft. You can look at, the Iran deal. Obama, on a lot of fronts, particularly dealing with Russia, basically is taking a knee and running up the clock in his presidency. He does not want to get into another large conflict with anybody with a little bit more than a year left in office, which is kind of an understandable instinct, except the whole world, announcing that you're a lame duck and you're not going to deal with anything. Some other diplomat said we looked completely impotent in dealing with Russia's aggression, whether it's in Ukraine, whether it's in Syria or things like that. Now, at this point, you're basically saying we don't really care who shot down a passenger airliner full of innocent civilians who were just flying in the wrong place at the wrong time. Those of us with long memories will remember Flight 007, Korean Airlines, got too close to the Soviet Union. Soviets blew it out of the air. This was a major galvanizing point in the first term of Ronald Reagan. Right? I mean, this is what led to the Evil Empire speech. This is where Reagan started making the case, say, no, this was not two equally flawed schools of thought. This was not, this was not a clash of the titans of superpowers. One side was right and one side is wrong. And one point was that the U.S. did its darndest to not blow passenger airliners out of the sky. And if they did, they took responsibility. For the Soviet Union, this was a matter of course. They were so paranoid and so itchy on the trigger finger that they would kill innocent people and then, lie about it. And you can see, years later, a circumstance like Chernobyl, where they end up irradiating a good chunk of a continent and they didn't want to say so. This is the culture of Vladimir Putin. This is what we're dealing with today. And we have now decided we're going to be acquiescent to this cover-up. We are going to not press this issue. We are not going to demand justice. We're not going to demand the truth. And, it's pretty appalling. It's pretty clear. If we won't stand up for the innocent people, how should we expect anyone else to either?
Very discouraging. Apparently only Republicans holding their ground on budgetary issues get cast blame for things,
Yeah. I mean, they're not like, some rodeo clown with an Obama mask, right? I mean, that's a national crisis.
Jim, I assume you're going to watch the Democratic debate tonight. I think the weirdest thing in my mind is that Lincoln Chafee will probably get more time tonight than any Republican got in the first two debates.
Yeah. I'm hoping there's a big discussion of his metric system proposal. But look, you know, don't let our cynicism discourage you, listeners of the Three Martini Lunch. Tune in to CNN tonight, the first Democratic presidential debate brought to you by Geritol Life Alert and Preparation H, I believe.
Oh, man. Yeah. And get some caffeine in your system because this is not going to be super energetic. Although maybe O'Malley will go crazy. He seems to be so excited that he's finally debating. He might actually break
the
fire.
That could be fun. And Trump just popping up out of nowhere could be fun. Wouldn't it be great if he just showed up and started yelling from the audience? Let him pull a Joe Wilson.
That would be funny. I think maybe towards the end of the debate, a single tear from one of the moderators over the fact that Joe Biden didn't show up because they brought that extra podium for him. I don't know.
There you go. They just have the empty podium just in case he decides last second, you know. Mr. Vice President, any thoughts? No?
Okay. Yeah, no.
Just in case he parachutes in with the flying Elvises.
If anything interesting happens, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Jim, good to be back with you. Talk to you then.
Good to see you back with you, Greg. Take care.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.